This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, I'm Doug Pollard, and joining me to give me a hand tonight in the studio is Andy Noonan from Southern Star. Hello, Andy. How are you?
Hi, Doug. Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You had a good week in the news?
Yes, I have. A busy one, as always. When isn't it?
Well, there's been quite a lot going on, but we'll get to some of that later. And also with me in the studio, staying with us for the whole show, we have Kay Sarah.
Hello. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, you're more than welcome, dear. Anyway, controversy continues to surround the practice of barebacking, that is, unprotected sex. A recent article in the British Medical Journal said the prevalence of barebacking porn was undermining safe sex messages and driving the rise in HIV infections among young gay men in the developed world. Chichi LaRue has built a successful empire in the porn business and is resolute in her opposition to barebacking. She's here in Oz right now and will join us later to explain why. The battle against anti-gay attitudes in sport takes another step forward. CHISI, the Combating Homophobia in Sport initiative, is looking for your help in making the case for change with a new survey, as Daniel Whithouse will explain. We've had an election and a big gay out in Queensland, so we'll be talking about that with Miles Heffernan from Brisbane. He's from Q News. And of course, Kay Sarah will be looking under her bonnet again. With the change in the weather, I expect it'll be a little fur-trimmed number, possibly with a matching muff. Mm-hmm. But first tonight, we have our regular chat with Corey Earlham, this week with the latest on the couple registration process for Centrelink benefits and the visit to Australia of former Iranian President Ayatollah Khatami. And as I said, on the line now, hopefully with good mobile phone reception, we've got Corey Earlham. Good evening, Corey.
Good evening, Doug. How are you?
Ah, very well, thank you. That's nice and clear. Good.
Yes, so, right, just down from Albury on the side of the road.
I could say something, but I don't think I will. Okay. Our visiting Ayatollah Khatami. Now, he's supposed to be a moderate. Explain what a moderate is in Ayatollah terms.
Yeah, look, the former president for Iran, often labelled as a reformist, he's a moderate in the sense that he's willing to engage in dialogue with the West. He's able to perhaps claim some small victories. He's recently reported that there was over 70% of university entrants were women. This is signs of reform in Iran. But unfortunately, still not willing to talk to the gay and lesbian community about people being put to death or being stoned purely because they're gay.
Now, is it that he's not willing to talk to us, or is it just that, because he was supposed to be having this meeting with Archbishop Freer, wasn't he? And is it the Archbishop who's blocking access, or the Ayatollah himself?
Yeah, look, I say that for two perspectives. Yes, it is the Archbishop Freer of the Anglican Church here in Melbourne who's hosting Interfaith Dialogue, who knocked back a request for us to be invited. But also, Khatami's often won't engage on the issue, won't talk about how to resolve his human rights violation. He's done similar 2 years ago when he was in the United Kingdom, and today, yesterday when he was in Canberra, no mention of the homosexual issue in Iran during his speech, and likely when he walks on stage at La Trobe University in Bundoora in about 10 minutes, there'll be no likely comment from him again today.
Hmm. Do you think it's actually worthwhile engaging in dialogue with someone like that? I mean, does it get us anywhere?
Look, it's not going to be us that make change in Iran. It's going to be the Iranians making change for themselves. Hopefully by international dialogue and international pressure, such as the United Nations motion last year in December, calling on all member countries to decriminalise homosexuality. These sort of incremental steps will help the Iranians go a long way towards doing things like removing the death penalty clause, looking at it from a human rights perspective, seeing if there's solutions other than the ones they have currently.
Andy, you wanted to come in here.
Hi, Corey. I was just wondering, is there anything that the everyday listener can do if they feel really passionate about this topic?
Yeah, I think they can email into the Foreign Minister, Stephen Smith, which is stephen.smithmp@aph.gov.au, and forward that off to him, saying, look, we're concerned about this. What's Australia doing to put pressure on Iran and the other six countries, that still put homosexuals to death?
I mean, that would probably be more effective than talking to Khatami, because, I mean, he's just recently withdrawn from candidacy for the presidency this time round, hasn't he?
He has recently withdrawn from presidency candidature, but he's still a very influential member within Iran. He still has a lot of respect from his former members, and to have him engaging in the issue would be a positive step.
Okay. Now, our other topic for this evening with you, Centrelink. We've just heard the announcement that they've opened their registration process.
That will open on Monday.
Same-sex couples.
Yep. Yep. Yesterday, Senator Ludwig, the Minister for Human Services, announced the Centrelink campaign that will run from 30 March through to the end of June. It's titled Couples Are Couples.
Mm-hmm.
It's a campaign that will run through both gay and straight media, on radio and in printed form, magazines and newspapers alike. There's quite a significant amount of money being put in by the government to remind people of their obligation to declare their relationship by the 1st of July. And that's something that's a positive move, that they're spending money to make sure that we're informed. It's disappointing that they're not writing to everybody, but as they say to us, there's 6 million people on Centrelink, and that would just be not cost-effective to be able to send a letter to each person currently receiving benefits.
Well, I don't mind, really. I mean, they have actually bought a lot of announcements on Joy, so I'm quite happy with the money coming to the station from that.
I'm not hearing advertorial, am I?
Well, you won't be hearing advertorial. You will be hearing Hank Yongan again on the Rainbow Report. You may remember you were here when we last had him off for a whole show. We're having him back again for another whole show on the 26th of April, and I hope you'll be able to be here again for that.
I'm looking forward to it. I am able to give your listeners a bit of an exclusive to let them know. When we had Hank on last time, we asked the question around pensioners' concession cards as to how would suddenly prevent somebody being outed, because currently...
Oh, yes, computer says no and all that. You've got to put both names on, yes?
Yeah, that's the one. Mm-hmm. And they've found a solution. There will be a process by which somebody can receive a card with just their name on it, and we look forward to getting more details as to how somebody will go about that from Hank when he comes on the show.
And we also hope the process actually works.
It says yes, hopefully.
Well, hopefully, yeah. Now, this is kind of, I don't know, there's still no progress on the whole grandfathering issue. They were not likely to be. I mean, the last thing I saw, they were kind of blaming it all on us.
The minister came out in a number of media articles over the last couple of days talking about the fact that the gay and lesbian community had fought for this equality, and in the government's view, there would be a continuation of discrimination if you treated some same-sex couples separately from others. What he's saying is that grandfathering would only protect some. What we're saying in response to that, though, is that there's a very big difference between the technical equality definition that he's using and a substantive equality definition that we would use, where you incorporate the historical discrimination that people have suffered, along with what sort of benefits will people receive out of these reforms. Mm. And of the 84 laws, not many older couples over the age of 65 are going to be able to receive benefits of these reforms, because they've already done their tax contribution, they've already done their super co-contribution period of life, and they haven't been able to access those benefits.
Mm. Well, it all sounds a bit Jesuitical to me. Darren.
Darren. Yes, Kay.
I beg your pardon.
How are you,
it must be the way I've got my lipstick on. No, I think they...
On the
yes,
other
indeed. Yes, I am feeling rather masculine. Clearly, I should have shaved. No, I think that given the fact that they want to afford us all of this equality, I think we should use it for broader lobbying on other issues of equality, not the least of which is gay marriage in Australia.
Look, Tay, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that the next couple of years are going to be very crucial on this discussion of gay marriage. This year we have the ALP National Triennial Conference, which happens only once every 3 years, where the ALP party decides what their platform will be for the 2010 election. And it's 5 years since this marriage ban was put in August this year, 5 years since gays and lesbians have been told you're a second-class citizen that will never be able to get married under current Australian law.
About time that one went on the junk heap, I think.
Corey, just going back to the grandfathering clause, there seemed to be some sort of allegations, I guess, that this was a sort of afterthought, that people only had thought about this, the effects that the new legislation would have. Is that the case?
Look, I think the people who are saying that obviously haven't read the Herriot report that mentioned this. They definitely haven't read ACE's submission to the Senate inquiry that raised and lobbied for this.
Or they have conveniently forgotten it, as politicians are inclined to do.
Quite possibly. I take on board the comments that people have made that this wasn't a loud and noisy complaint from the community at the time. There were 85 different pieces of legislation, a hostile opposition to get family law through, and whilst it was mentioned, it wasn't necessarily the cornerstone of the issues raised in the public forum.
No, well, I think it's just a lesson there, isn't it? That, I mean, if you want something, you've got to ask for it up front. You can't sort of assume that people will necessarily kind of play fair further down the line. Okay, Corey, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much for your time tonight, and enjoy whatever you're going to be getting up to.
Bye-bye.
Take care. That was Corey Earlham there from the Australian Coalition for Equality. We'll take a brief break.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is the Rainbow Report.
Yes, on Joy 94.9, and bringing it to you is me, Doug Pollard, with the able assistance of Andy Noonan and Kay Serrar. Do you play football or rugby? Do you belong to your local tennis club? In fact, are you now or have you ever been an active participant in any mainstream sports club or organisation? If so, my next guest wants to hear from you. Well, not perhaps directly, but indirectly. Daniel Whithouse is a member of CHISI, Combating Homophobia in Sport Initiative. You really do have to find a new name for that, you know.
We will.
And for those of you who don't know what that is, perhaps you'd like to give us a quick explanation, Daniel.
Yeah, definitely, Doug. CHISI is basically a group of organisations that have been working over the last couple of years to basically challenge the homophobia that we see going on in mainstream sport. As we all know, sport is an obsession of this country of ours, whether we like it or not, and homophobia in that is kind of like a dirty open secret. And the culmination of that was putting together some kind of evidence, and hence we have the online survey.
Okay, so this is called Come Out to Play. Now, who do you want to answer this survey?
That's a really good question. We want anyone and everyone who has been involved in sport at some stage in their lives.
Have to be a current member, they kind of had experiences in the past.
Absolutely, and the good thing about this research is that it's actually a really broad definition of sport. We're trying to encompass people's, you know, health and also physical activity as well. So you don't necessarily have to have been involved in any particular organised sport in the last 20 years. It even goes back to people's sporting experience in schools as well. So pretty much we want to get, I guess, a sense of what people's experiences have been, but also the reasons why they might not be involved.
Okay, so what you're looking for is people who think their sexuality has somehow interfered with their enjoyment of or ability to participate in sport.
Also, but we're looking for the good, the bad, and the ugly. So we are looking at we are looking for the good stuff too. So there's heaps of people who have been involved in sport who have had really good experiences, but we don't want them just to say we've had a good experience, we won't do the survey. We want to know actually what has happened in a more organised sense, because often we find that this stuff happens by accident or because of great individuals within clubs, rather than because of some kind of organised sort of policy or practice.
What about if people weren't out at school? Because, I mean, that brings on a different... And have come out later, which is very often the case. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, sometimes your experience with sport then might be... You know, you wouldn't have experienced homophobia at that level. Are you looking to speak to those people as well?
Please, if you have been involved in sport and you're listening right now at any level, please click on. It'll take you about 20 minutes. That will probably take you approximately one cuppa. I'm so excited I'll probably come around and make the cuppa myself if I have to. But, yeah, like get online, a couple of clicks, a couple of answers, and it'll go a great way to making a difference in Victoria.
Okay, now, you better give them the address they've actually got to click on before we go any further, which is www.comeouttoplay,
and we're getting funky because the two is actually the number two,
right.
.net. So that's www.comeouttoplay.net.
Right. Now, what is the point of doing the survey? Why do you need this information?
Yeah, basically we need this information because there is no evidence. This is pretty much a world first because the only time this kind of research has ever been done in the world was in the Netherlands. They sent out a couple of paper surveys around sort of probably somewhere like Amsterdam. This is the first kind of research of its kind. The reason why we need this is some of you might actually remember things like the Writing Themselves In Again report, which has made such great headway into education and has led to lots of resourcing and lots of knowledge and lots of, I guess, awareness raising.
That was all about experiences that children had at school of homophobia, of being bullied, and all those sort of things.
Yep.
So you're wanting to kind of replicate that in a sporting context.
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons why we got Latrobe on as a partner, in order to put the survey together. But what this will lead to is, I guess, descriptive information about what's going on in sport, but also, I guess, a bit of a message to people within clubs around what they can do more broadly. So we're actually trying to, get up the sort of policy ladder and to the decision makers, and they need evidence base. If you look at governments at the moment, they want evidence. It's evidence-based funding, it's evidence-based decision-making, and we're hoping that we're going to twist their arm with a come-out-to-play research report.
So this is a bit like when the police come along and they say, the hierarchy in the police will say, well, we don't need gay and lesbian liaison officers because we don't get much anti-gay crime reported. So then the police run a campaign to get people to report anti-gay crime, and then that is used to justify the gay and lesbian liaison officers to the high command. It's a similar kind of process.
Yeah. We're not, as I said, we're looking for the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's not just
But the point is you need the evidence.
Absolutely, we need the evidence, and as I said, we haven't had that before.
Daniel, you've talked about sports, which I guess is kind of like club-type pursuits, but what about individual health pursuits, like going to the gym or even just your local sort of swimming?
Things like that are actually included.
Because I actually think that would probably include more people than organised team sports.
Yeah, it's included in the survey. So
anybody that goes to the gym regularly and has a view on that their gym or other gyms' attitudes toward gays and lesbians, then they should hop online and complete the survey.
Aerobics is in there too, right. Things like that. So it is, as I said, a broader definition of sport. Just in case if you're thinking maybe this doesn't include me, click on anyway and have a look at the sports that we actually cover, and I think that you'll be surprised, because that was the feedback we got, is that we're really, really keen to also look at physical activity, the health benefits, because we do know the health benefits, both physical and mental, that sport provides.
Well, that's the primary motivation behind promoting sports, is the health benefits, certainly from a funded point of view. So I would have thought that, addressing people's kind of physical activity is pretty critical in a lot of ways.
And because it's a relatively new area of research, actually the physical activity and the health sort of benefit questions are actually really highly reliable and valid from a sort of research statistical standpoint, whereas the other ones are sort of based more on what we've found with what they've found in education. So they're sort of replicated from the schools area.
Mm. Okay. What about, what sort of personal information do you have to give in order to participate?
Absolutely anonymous. So it's not you giving your name and address and things like that, but things like age range and things.
Mm-hmm. Peck size. No.
There might be some people out there who's
going to compete with Daniel on that one. So you're going to want things like the age range of people, because obviously there are other factors intersecting here. I mean, older people, for example, speaking from experience, often find they're not terribly welcome in some gyms, for example.
And things also like your ethnic background and things like that will be asked for as well. And again, all that stuff is optional.
Yep.
What practical things can come out of it, though, on a practical level? Say results show that there was a lot of homophobia going on, XYZ. What practically could that result in?
Yeah, as I was saying, governments and other organisations are really looking towards evidence and needing it to be in front of them. They need the hard facts, they need the numbers. That will go some way. But also, I guess, just some awareness raising about, gee, this really is an issue. I mean, it's kind of like the Australia believes it's not a racist country, you know, like we're not a racist country. And therefore, I think it's the same with homophobia. And I think that if you look at around sporting organisations, they go, oh, surely it can't be that bad. You know, come on. You know, even within the LGBT community, you'll get comments like that. But again, we're hoping that it's going to be based on what the clubs can do a bit more formally and a bit more broadly as opposed to what individuals...
Okay, so let's have that web address once more before we go.
www.comeouttoplaywiththenumber2.net. And remember that cuppa offer.
Okay, take you about 20 minutes and one cuppa and Daniel will come around and stir in your sugar cube for you.
Believe me, it'd be worth it.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Daniel. And good luck with it. We hope plenty of people do click on there and complete that survey. You're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9. In a moment, we'll talk about barebacking with one of the world's biggest producers of safe sex erotica, Chi-Chi LaRue.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is The Rainbow Report.
On the line now, we do have, in fact, Chi-Chi LaRue. Hello, Chi-Chi.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
And how are you enjoying Australia?
I'm loving it. Australia is fantastic. The people are fantastic. It's great. I'm in Lorne right now. I'm in Lorne at the Adult X convention.
Oh, yes.
Cal Vista. So it's beautiful here. We're right on the beach, so I'm loving it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Now, you're... I guess one of the things you're famous for, or most famous for, aside from being something of a drag icon, is you've got a very sizable business in the porn industry, but you will only produce safe sex videos. You don't allow any barebacking.
Safer sexes.
Safer sex, okay.
Yeah. But, no barebacking and no coming in the mouth or ass or anything like that. Can I say that?
Yes, of course. We are a gay and lesbian radio station.
Oh, fantastic.
We don't mind. We don't mind. What led you to take this stance? I mean, surely, you know, people are prepared to pay a premium for bareback porn and things like that, so this must have cost you something business-wise.
I just find bareback porn to be kind of a niche market, and I think people just want to see it because people are telling them that they shouldn't. So... I actually think that barebacking movies are kind of falling off in popularity actually right now. So that's my prediction.
That's probably very good news. I mean, I mentioned on air earlier before you joined us, there was an article in the British Medical Journal this month that said the prevalence of barebacking porn was one of the things that was driving the rise in HIV among younger gay men in Western Europe and in America.
And that's exactly one of the reasons why I don't make it. You know, it's, I believe that people emulate and do what they see. So if I'm popular enough to sell a movie to someone with my name, and my name is associated with something, I want them to see safer sex practices being done in my movies. So hopefully, and they'll do it.
Yeah, you've been quoted as saying you've always promoted on your sets the same thing you feel every gay man should practice in his personal life. Assume everyone you're having sex with is HIV positive.
Absolutely.
So you think unprotected sex is something you should avoid entirely?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a... You know, I can suggest it. Listen, people are going to make their own personal choices, as they would to do drugs or drink or drive a car at 100 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone. You know, I mean, they're going to make their own choices to protect themselves. And, you know, I just hope that maybe by me suggesting it, that maybe they'll take the suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, I write a column in one of the gay papers here, and I recently made something of a similar statement saying that, you know, we've got to get back to a situation that we did have for a brief while where everybody said, you know, having sex without a condom is wrong.
Well, you know, people don't look sick anymore. People, back in the, when it was at its height, you know, you could really... there was a really dark cloud over the gay community.
I remember it well.
Yes, yes. And, you know, you could tell pretty much who, you know, they really stuck out. And people don't stick out anymore. Everybody's happy and healthy and, you know, rocking out and at the clubs and feeling it, and their shirts are off and their bodies are fabulous, and you know, you don't think about it anymore.
No.
And that's what I think is one of the reasons why the younger generation that's coming up is now, they weren't devastated. They didn't lose a bunch of friends.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine only about a week ago, and he was saying, do you remember that time when we were going to, like, one or two funerals a week?
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Which this generation have not done. Now, Kesara, you want to come in on this, don't you?
Yeah.
Chi-Chi, hey, it's Kesara here. And interestingly enough, I also do drag, but I'm not involved in the porn industry at all. So, I mean, do you have any advice? How might I get started in this fabulous industry of yours?
Oh, you know what? If you're a drag queen, honey, I want you to stay away. There's only room for one drag queen.
I was actually also interested in how you got started in the industry. Where did it all come from?
Well, you know, I've been a bit of a porn fanatic since I was young, and started with straight porn, and, you know, really, really started just because I was a fat boy who was very insecure, and still is. You know, when you're a fat boy and you go into a gay bar, you are invisible, and...
not if you're in drag, you nut.
Hello. That's why, right? Got a little bit of rouge and a big wig, and you're a star. So, you know, it's like, but what I did was when I would watch these movies, I would just think, my gosh, these people are so lucky to be able to have the security to take their clothes off and do this for people to watch. And it was really kind of, you know. It sounds corny, but, you know, getting into the porn industry, it was a little bit empowering to be around all this nakedness, and it helped me be a little more secure and be able to take my shirt off and go into a swimming pool.
It sounds like it's been a real liberation for you in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and now I've lost 103 pounds, so getting closer to being maybe porn star.
Yes, Chi-Chi, we were speaking just before the program started that porn obviously goes through fashions, and I remember some years back it seemed to be a little bit grittier, a little bit muddier, a little bit furrier, and then it was kind of became all buffed and tanned. Yeah. And where it's do you great. Stand on that? Is there any movement afoot to kind of explore this diversity of physical types in porn at all?
If you watch my movies, if you know my movies, you'll see everything in my movies. I am an equal opportunity. I love bears. I love twinks. I love jocks. I love, you know, your normal guy. I love hairy bodies. I love hairy butts.
Stop.
You know?
I can see Daniel nodding here as well.
And I like it, you know, and I like all that. And I like dirty, gritty, raw sex club sex. And I like romantic kissing. So, you know, I'm across the board. When I got into the business, everyone was looking for the next Jeff Stryker or Ryan Idol, and that was the gay for pay, straight trade top that would just stand there and be serviced and be bored while doing it. And I actually, you know, people always say, well, all your models are shaved and blah, and it's like, no, you don't know me at all then, because I discovered Zach Spears, who was the hairiest of the hairy, and, you know, got him into this business at the height of when everybody was shaved, and I was met with a lot of resistance from people like Chuck Holmes, who owned Falcon, and when I brought pictures of Zach in, he was like, well, we're going to need to shave, you know, his chest, and I was like, are you mad? And nowadays you can see, you know, anything that you want. So I mean, and I like to cater to everybody. That's why with my different companies, All Worlds and Catalina and Channel One and Rascal, you can see every different kind of boy.
Segmenting the marketplace, very, very, very wise move there.
Now, before we go, we ought to allow you to do a little commercial for the forum entitled Ifs and Buts, The Raw Truth About Barebacking. Tell us a bit about that.
That's going to be at Circuit on Sunday, starting at 7. And I may or may not be in drag because I'm leaving Lorne late, so I don't even know if I'm going to have time to fluff up a wig. But whether or not
I'll just take your shirt off instead,
and I'll be and I'll be there with Marco Blaze, who is a Titan exclusive, a beautiful, yummy boy, and we will be there, and Keith Webb, one of the owners of Titan, and we will be there, and we will be speaking about it. And you know,
And it will be broadcast live on Joy 94.9.
Yes. And it will be broadcast live. And you know, I'm gonna talk about it, but I'm going to say that all this talking about it and condemning it is really making people run out and want to see a bareback movie. So I'm trying to like counterbalance it to
championing the claim, safe sex is hot sex, I think is the phrase you use,
exactly.
Isn't it?
SafeSexIsHotSex.com. I'm protecting my models. It's like if you work with somebody and they're working in a steel plant and they're welding and you tell them, well, in my steel plant, you can't wear gloves or goggles, you know, it's the same thing. You have to protect the people that work for you. These boys are very important, and as everybody is, and that's why I think people should protect themselves whenever possible.
Okay, well, thanks very much for that, Chi-Chi. Good luck with the forum on Sunday. And
thank you, guys. Joy has been great to me while I've been here. I've done 3 shows now on Joy, and I made it through it. Through one of Adam's
positions, and overexposure in your business is a kind of occupational risk, yeah?
Totally.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chi-Chi. Good night.
Bye-bye.
That was Chi-Chi LaRue.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Informing, entertaining and provoking. This is The Rainbow Report.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing The Rainbow Report to you on Joy 94.9. Ably assisted here in the studio by Andy Noonan and Kay Sarah. Now, believe it or not, there is gay life in cities other than Melbourne and Sydney, even as far north as Brisbane. And to tell us all about what's been happening up there, we've got Miles Heffernan of Q News on the line. Good evening, Miles.
G'day, Doug. How are you going?
I'm going pretty well. You've been having a big gay out up there, I believe.
Look, we've been very busy poofs up this part of the world.
And how did it go?
Smashing. It started at sort of noon for Big Gay Day, and we rolled our sort of carcasses out at about 11 p.m. that night after one of the famous old sort of Crystal Waters played as well as the Operator Please. It was just a smashing day.
Yeah, and I gather you raised a fair amount of money for local charities too.
Yeah, just about 40 grand overall. So there was between
In one day. That's pretty good going.
And those famous wrist bracelets that everybody's got these days. So if you didn't see a queen there with at least 10 of them, that just wasn't enough. They had to be sold more.
Yeah, why does everyone want these little rubber bracelets nowadays? I just really don't understand that one. But
look, they're a fashion accessory that I hope will go the way of, Punky Brewster.
Who's Punky Brewster? giving my age away there. Okay. The other big event you've had going on up there is you've had an election. Now, that was kind of a stunning result, wasn't it? Everyone was giving Anna Bligh no chance of getting back, and then all of a sudden she romps home pretty handily.
Yeah, it knocked them out of the ballpark. We were all a bit surprised by that. Q News had a lot of marketing from the LNP, which we were most surprised by, and the polling was suggesting that they were going to do a little better than they did. But unfortunately for the openly gay candidate of Central Brisbane, he got belted out the door.
Oh, that's a pity. I mean, gay issues didn't really play much part in the campaign, did they? I mean, I know John Frame and a few other people up there were trying to get statements out of Bligh and Springborg as to where they stood on things like the unequal age of consent and so on and so forth, but gay issues got pretty much ignored, as I understand it.
They did. I was able to get some good comments out of Springborg, we had Bligh's media people promise to interview us or to be interviewed, including us holding the paper off so that we could get that interview. And then 1 o'clock, which is about 3 hours after our last deadline, they pulled the pin. So I'm sure that was just a bad timing and nothing to do with media playing at all, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. But it's a pity these issues didn't get aired. Andy.
I have to say I had very similar problems. I tried to get comment from both sides and was very unsuccessful after many phone calls. So I hear your pain, Miles.
Yeah, look, we ended up getting an open letter from Laurie, which was not too bad. And in fairness to him, he said, look, we're not going to touch age of consent. But at least he sort of stated his position, even though it's a kind of an abhorrent position. He was reasonable enough to respond to it, where Bly, who's meant to be more focused on these issues, just did the old two-step.
Well, I think, you know, if she was feeling that her job might be on the line, she didn't want to get involved in anything that might be controversial. And I suppose, given the way politicians have been dancing around it for a very long time in Queensland, this unequal age of consent is seen as something of a hot potato.
Oh, it is. It's like, you must not put a willy in a little boy's bottoms because then you'll be a dirty poofter, I think is the
sense. Not to be too subtle.
No, we're classy up here.
I think it's bad that no comment could be made, or that the Bly government couldn't come out with anything, not even some kind of nominal statement to support the gay community after a few little sidesteps before the election, because essentially no one knows what their policy was on gay issues and they were elected. So I think that's really shocking that they couldn't bring themselves to come up with anything.
They did make a very kind of fluffy little statement some while before the election about possibly going to a couple of night school classes to find out what a relationship register was or something along those lines, didn't they?
That's right. The Queer Coalition organised a debate between Grace and Mark Woods for the Central Brisbane electorate, and that the issues were put to them directly. And it was, this sort of tacit, we might like to learn more about it, and it's just something I'm trying to learn more about, and we'll look at that in the future, sort of. So probably...
buy him a ticket to Victoria.
Considering it was back 19 and a half years ago that the Premier Pete actually said that there should be equal age of consent and gay marriage, and was recommended to the Goss government just 19 years ago, we'll get there soon.
Okay.
Miles, given the political cycle and, Bly's stunning victory, it would seem that now's a good time to be lobbying for some kind of statement on movement with the age of consent, for one thing, but I'm sure there's a whole raft of other issues you could address too. I mean, if they're going to act, they're going to do it earlier on in their term as opposed to closer to the election, right?
Spot on, Kay. And the one thing that came out of this that was really important was I was told, because even though they called an election 6 months early, they said, oh, well, why are all you special interest groups only doing this now? It's like, well, when you knock off over 30% of the voting time, we have only so many choices. So as a result of that, Q News and other aligned bodies are actually going to start this exercise now so that we can't be accused of last-minuting. So I agree with you more.
Well, I kind of think it doesn't really matter when you ask. It's going to be the wrong time one way or another, okay?
Oh, no, I think governments have a history of enacting on controversial issues when it's going to least affect their standing in the electorate. So if it's at all controversial, they'll do it earlier in the term as opposed to later. I'm not saying that this is necessarily going to happen in Queensland, but it could be good for a try. You never know what they might sneak through the back door, Miles.
Absolutely. Well, you remember Kennett, after he got in, he would have the teachers rallying within, I think, about 13 weeks of being elected. So you Victorians know how to do it well.
We do, yes. we could export him up to Queensland if you like. You could have him.
In fact, you can keep him. He's been busy opening his mouth and putting his foot in it, but fortunately at the moment he's only talking about football, which is, we're about
at
to stop.
At least his other hat's all right, though, when he's helping with depression.
Well, don't get me started on Beyond Blue and what they do and don't do on gay issues. They are getting a little bit better than they were. Of all the depression charities that are going there, all the other ones are terribly unhappy with Beyond Blue, because Beyond Blue gets all the attention and they're probably the ones who spend the least on tackling gay issues one way or another.
Mm. Well, I don't know if you know about Open Doors up here, but we were able to get a commitment from all of them, including the sitting government, that Open Doors was going to have their funds maintained. They only had $100,000 one-off funding, and we did get an election promise for that. And Open Doors is a specific gay and lesbian
suicide prevention, isn't it? Yeah.
So that was probably the single biggest win between the Queer Coalition and QNU that we think we've got out of this election.
Yeah, Miles, we've always been a little bit naughty down south and always accusing Queensland as being, you know, a bit of a basket case. But I think given the fact that this is the first state to elect a woman premier, it could actually be a feather in their cap to make some movement, I'd say fair-minded movement on gay and lesbian rights. So you know, there's your angle there.
It is a first, and let's just wait and see. I'm moderately confident, but I think with a correct structure and the right arguments, we're in a good place, because what it shows is that there's plenty of room for good argument, because the Conservative Party doesn't seem to be having traction, so therefore you might be able to sneak a bit of controversy in.
Yes, and despite the fact that it's, you know, the same party getting back into power again with that, she's made some major changes in her cabinet. I think more than half of them are gone. So it's obviously kind of like a very much a new broom within this new government now that she's choosing her own people.
And in fairness to some of her junior ministers that we've had some direct contact with, I'm quietly confident that we've got the year of government that we didn't have as little as a year ago.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Miles. I'll let you get back to the nice, warm, wet weather up there, or whatever it is you're having this week.
Wonderful. You boys and girls have a good night.
We will. That was Miles Heffernan from Q News in Brisbane there. It does actually sound like quite, quite positive news, really.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
We'll just have to see where it goes from here. Well, now it's time for Kay Sera to pop on her little fur-trimmed bonnet and matching muff and and take yet another look at the Queer Film Festival.
Yes, thank you, Doug. We are in the thick of the Queer Melbourne Queer Film Festival again. You know what I'm saying? Now, I want to take you back to earlier this week. It's early Wednesday evening, and I'm enjoying a golden gay time in the cafe at Acme. That's the Australia Centre of the Moving Image, darling. Very cultured. I'm here, of course, for the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, and while I've tactfully left the drag in the bag for the evening, just in case you're wondering, I'll be buggered if I'm going to abstain from my favourite ice cream. In fact, I'm thinking of mounting a campaign to make the Golden Gay Time our national icon. Come on, Penny, do something useful when you're in power. Anyway, back to Acme Cafe. Opposite me is a straight couple canoodling over a mug of hot chocolate. I want to run over and slap them and remind them this is Hello Queer Turf for at least 10 days, but decency gets the better of me, and I reposition my Golden Gay Time wrapper so it is in clear view. Suffice to say, this subtle protest doesn't work. Far too many heterosexuals behave like they own the planet, especially in Iran. At best, blissfully ignorant to the alternative, worse still, aggressive and bigoted. That's Iran. But let's face it, this is one of the reasons we need a queer film festival. Come on, Lisa, start a queer film festival in Iran. Time to head off to the movies, as Margaret Pomerance would say. The heteros can have the cafe along with their sloppy hot chocolate. The film I've come to see is A Outra Margem, which translates roughly as The Other Side. It's from Portugal, darling, and this is an Australia premiere. Yet another good reason for a queer film festival. I'm feeling very brave this year. I've made a decision to avoid films from America, and unlike the blissfully ignorant heterosexuals in the cafe, seek out the alternative. Fortunately, there are just enough foreign films in the festival to satisfy my yearning for the queer cultural alternative. A Outra Margem is a delight. It's all about sad Ricardo, whose will to live is sapped away when his lover dies. He travels back to the country town of his youth and is comforted by his sister, Maria, and her young son, Vasco, who has Down syndrome. Oh, I forgot to mention, Ricardo is also a drag queen, but that's really a sideline compared to the other powerful themes explored in this film. Loving family, strength of community, acceptance of difference. Oh, help, I'm starting to sound like Oprah. Yes, you're right, that's far too moral majority. How about the alternative? Ellen. Better, much better. The other film I managed to catch was called All My Life, or Tul Omri. It's a story of gay love set in modern Egypt, and really is quite daring considering the impact of the fundamentalists in this part of the world. Actually, there were a couple of American characters in this story, but interestingly, they came across as most shallow compared to the sincerity, the eloquence of the central character of Rami. You see, there is an alternative to dominant American culture. I'm Kay Sarar, and I would like to commend the folk who pitched popcorn at the screen during the particular nasty rant in the documentary Jerusalem is Proud to Present. It struck me as a most appropriate response. I wanted to stand up and wave my golden gay time wrapper, but modesty got the better of me, and besides, I'd thrown it in the bin. Happy film going.
So, thank you for that, Kay, but I mean, what
not as many jokes as I normally have.
No, well, that's all right,
we're,
dear.
We're talking about Iran and Egypt, darling.
We can't be funny all the time, dear. what was the particularly nasty rant in Jerusalem is Proud to Present about? I mean, who was ranting?
Yes, it was from actually one of the councillors in Jerusalem, and she had formed a little lobby group that was obviously against the World Pride March, the proposed Pride March, and one of the members was actually saying the most outrageous things about HIV and AIDS, and something along the lines of, we know all these homosexuals would want to just come over here and infect our children. It was really quite horrid. Wow. And this actually happened. Their front row were pelting their popcorn at the screen, which was very, very funny, and I thought really quite appropriate.
What do you think about hosting World Pride in a place
like Jerusalem?
Well, I mean,
is that playing with fire?
Oh, I think it's fraught with problems. But then again, I think it's fraught with problems having Jerusalem as the capital of Israel to begin with.
I mean, part of me wants to say that you're never going to win these battles when there are really strong religious groups, you know, that have a political influence in these countries, even if they do propose to have sort of civil rights or the rule of law.
Well, Israel's a rather odd place in some respects, because on the one hand, you've got these extremely religious people with their extremely rigid views. On the other hand, you have the kind of liberal democratic tradition, which is the Jews of Europe brought with them, so the two kind of wash up against each other all the time. There's a friend of yours actually just emailed Kay. Hi guys, enjoying the show very much. Quick hello to Kay Sarar from Peter and Douglas in Munich.
Oh, lovely.
All the best. That's from Peter Gloucester. A fan of yours, I take it?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, isn't that
nice?
I was
going to say something in German, but I can't think of anything.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Count up to 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Almost. Almost.
Lose something out, eh?
Yeah, I think you probably did. I can't do it in German. I can probably do it in Dutch. Unfortunately, we've run out of time now. Thank you very much. My guests tonight were Andy Noonan from Southern Star, Daniel Whithouse from Chissy, Chichi LaRue from All Points American and Very American too, and Miles Heffernan of Q News, not to mention that star of stage, screen and Oscar seat warmer, Kay Sarar. A big thanks also to you. Thanks for spending the time with us. The show is produced by Bianca Johnston. Technical production by Michael Bayliss. I'm Doug Pollard, and I will be back with you again next week with another Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.